This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday and happy... I just discovered this today. Literally as I was doing my prep for the show. Happy Columbus Day. Did you even know that today was Columbus Day?
You just discovered Columbus Day.
I just discovered Columbus Day. Did you know it was Columbus Day?
I did, only because my wife told me yesterday that it was Columbus Day. I did not know prior to that, no.
Columbus Day is, let's be honest, Columbus Day's taken a beating recently, right? It used to be.
I would say more 10 years ago it did.
Yeah, but it's now.
I think then people started doing the math of, hey, maybe we should stop ripping on Columbus Day because that's an extra day off in October.
Well, so now it feels like one of those holidays that's not particularly deployed, not recognized. Like everyone knows when Labor Day is, right?
I mean, yeah.
Of course, the big ones, Christmas, Thanksgiving, whatever. But like the other ones, everyone knows when Labor Day is.
Yeah, because it's Memorial Day. They're like time markers for the seasons.
And I'm going to go ahead and say everyone knows when July 4th is.
Yeah,
that's
probably
convenient.
Get that one, yeah.
That's very convenient, by the way. And then MLK Day. I have to look up the date of that. Every day, I look
usually
at the Grizzlies schedule.
Third Monday,
January, and Memorial Day. What's Memorial Day?
It's always like the last.
Is it the last? What is it?
It's the last Monday. It's always the end of May.
But we all celebrate it, recognize it. And here's the thing: there's some holidays where you always get the day off. Everyone's off, right?
Correct.
Everyone's off. You know that. Columbus Day is not that.
Correct. Columbus Day and President's Day are the same thing to me.
Well, the very similar. The difference, of course, is...
I'm talking about practically.
Practically.
Yes.
Don't more people get President's Day off?
Maybe, but not many.
So, do you know... let me ask you this. According to our country, is today Columbus Day? Is it still Columbus Day?
I'm going to say, like, probably not.
No, it is. It is. It's still a federal holiday. As Columbus Day.
I mean, I know it's a bank holiday, yeah.
What's weird is, it is a federal holiday as Columbus Day, but they put out a proclamation recognizing Indigenous peoples, recognizing it as Indigenous Peoples Day. And here's the problem. This is problematic. Like, I do think that we can get a little crazy with the whole demanding purity of people in order to honor them. Even modern people. Like demanding, we can get a little crazy with cancellation, even in modern times.
Yes.
Not just, but I do think it is problematic. I mean, if you read about Columbus, here's the problem.
He thought he was in India?
Cut off thousands and thousands of people's hands if they didn't bring him gold.
Yeah. I still think the bigger problem is he thought he was in India.
Well, that's fine, but that's not cruel to think you're in India. That shows you're misguided, but it's the cruelty that gets me. He would, in both Haiti and the Dominican Republic, he would say, if I don't get so much gold, I'm going to lop off your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just according to just wild-ass rumors on the internet. It's reputable publications have all published this story about the hands, and it gets more gruesome than that. He is truly a genocidal maniac, and so I do think, although the whole Indigenous Peoples Day is a little la-di-da for me, right? I can see why it's problematic. Now, in Tennessee, what's interesting is still Columbus Day, but you know when Columbus Day is in Tennessee?
I do not.
I think this is correct. It's the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Black Friday.
No one's going to actually call it that, but what happens is the state wants to give people that extra day off, right? They want to give them the 4-day weekend. And so the day off that they could be having on Columbus Day, they move that to that Friday. So in Tennessee, there is still...
That's like a punt, but yeah.
Most of the states, more, the federal government still calls it Columbus Day. Most states do not. But then there's states like Tennessee that just like shift it for convenience sake, right? Which is very presidential day of them, which is very president's day of them to shift it for convenience sake. It is also, by the way, Thanksgiving in Canada.
Hey, there you go.
Today is also Thanksgiving in Canada. So whatever you happen to be celebrating, we wish you the best with it. And we hope it's a merry day for you. And it promises to be quite the week, Jeffrey, because we got so much sports, including my Buffalo Bills tonight. We got also the Grizzlies tonight against the Indiana Pacers. They were triumphant over the weekend. So we got that. The college football games just keep rolling along. We're going to have Georgia, Texas. We're going to have Tennessee, Alabama. Like after another unbelievable weekend of college football this past weekend, we've got more to look forward to. We also had, the Memphis Tigers had their media day. We learned Friday that they were picked to finish second in the AAC. Too good for the AAC, but picked second in the AAC. So we learned that. Penny Hardaway was doing interviews yesterday, did a really interesting interview with Parthopadia, I owe the Daily Memphian, that I would commend to you to read. Sounded self-reflective introspective. It was an interesting piece with Penny. And then, of course, tomorrow we've got Memphis, the St. Jude Tip-Off Classic.
Hoops for St. Jude Tip-Off Classic.
Hoops for St. Jude Tip-Off Classic. Thank you. And that is tomorrow as the Memphis men play the University of North Carolina and the Memphis women play the University of South Carolina. So that is happening tomorrow. And then Wednesday, we got the inductions to the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame. I will be serving as MC. And I got to tell you, it's going to be heavier lifting because normally it's me, Wolo, and Jarvis. Jarvis is now an honoree, so I got to be picking up some of his slack. I think that's understandable.
Yeah.
He should be in the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame. Congratulations in advance to Jarvis for that. Going in with Zeebo, among others.
That's a lot of range.
And Reggie White also going in. And Andre Turner also going in. So it's an incredibly busy week of sports. It is a busy day here, of course, as it is every Monday. We're going to do the fight song roundup in the next segment. Chris Harrington's going to join us straight up 10 o'clock to talk about the Grizzlies and the NBA. And then we will dig into everything else. To start with college football, I would say, Jeffrey, that I came away with two themes from the weekend.
Okay.
One was the incredibly epic games we witnessed, right? We had Oregon, Ohio State. We had Penn State, USC. We had LSU, Ole Miss. We had the Tennessee game going into overtime.
Like it was epic finishes.
It was, yeah, okay. Game after game after game after game that you didn't know what the hell was going to happen, right?
Yes.
Like it was, and some of them were epic games and some of them were floundering games that.
Yeah, Ohio State, Oregon was not the same thing as Ole Miss, LSU.
No, but also definitely not the same thing as Tennessee, Florida.
Correct.
Right? Those are very different things. But thrilling.
Yes.
In the way that they all played out. So we had that. We had the, oh my God, can't be, oh, did you see that? Oh my God. Hold it. Like one after another after another. And then we also had, it was interesting picking the songs for the fight song roundup. And I take that responsibility very seriously. It was kind of tough, Jeffrey, because there were a lot of wins that were kind of meh, that left you wanting more, right?
Yeah, I think that's more than fair.
There was Alabama, which left you wanting more. There was Georgia that left you wanting more. There was Tennessee, which certainly left you wanting more. And there was Memphis, which, even though it was a 18-point win on the road over a team that was supposedly good, that left you wanting more. So you had this, it was like, so what? Should I be playing the Georgia fight song today after that? Should I be playing the Tennessee fight song today after that? Should I be playing the Alabama fight song today after that?
No, because I'm also of the mind, like, hey, they've got opportunities this week that they can get their song played.
I couldn't play. I'll be honest.
I don't think any of those performances...
playing the Tennessee fight song. I'm not playing the Alabama fight song. I'm not playing the Georgia fight song. I'm not playing the Memphis fight song.
Yeah,
none of them. I'm more inclined to play the Mississippi State fight song.
Yeah, statement
loss.
At least,
maybe second half they found a quarterback.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Listen, Mississippi State's...
Statement loss. They've been much better the last 2 weeks.
Mississippi State's offense has outscored Ole Miss's offense in league play.
there you go. So it was just kind of nutty and a little bit of a muddle. And it does suggest it's a little bit... Honestly, the NFL, because there at least there's the Chiefs, the NFL feels like there's less parity than college football this year, which is weird. I mean, you've got college football. When we began this season, there were two teams that seemed to be above all others before the season began.
Yep.
It was Georgia and Ohio State.
Yep.
Above all others.
Mm-hmm.
Clear separation there.
I mean, there were bets in Vegas that was Georgia, Ohio State versus the field.
Right.
Like that, and that wasn't like a novelty bet. Like they were offering it at regular books.
And now they've both lost.
Correct.
They both have losses. And in the meantime, now this isn't the same, but in the meantime, you've got Indiana and Iowa State with undefeated, among others.
Yeah.
Among other interesting undefeated teams, including
just gonna leave Pitt out of that?
Including Pitt and BYU and of course Army and Navy. And yes, so
BYU might be in the good category of like they really can make the claim, get no respect.
I think so.
Because
by the way, their fans look great.
Oh yeah,
that looked great. It's funny watching their fans in that game and how packed it was and whatever. I was reflecting back to the Miami Beach Bowl when Memphis was like beaten BYU.
Yeah, literally.
So what? And I felt a little bad. Like, I'm like, well, come on. I'm not going to play Memphis to Alabama, but Memphis can, like, that should be something to aspire to. Anyway, it was just a weird weekend of college football and one that's a little bit tricky to sort out. Let's start with Memphis.
May I add something else?
Yes.
Because everything that you just said, I wholeheartedly agree with. What if Texas is just better than everybody?
Texas could be just better than everybody, and we will be playing their fight song.
Yeah.
On the other hand, can you tell that they're better than everybody
by
what they just did against that Oklahoma team?
No, because that Oklahoma offense is just bad.
All their receivers are gone, and they picked the wrong quarterback.
Yeah.
Would like to have Dylan Gabriel back there?
I think they probably would, although the question, there's always this one. It's like, what if Dylan Gabriel didn't want to be back?
Well, there's that.
What if Dylan Gabriel took a look around the room and was like, yeah, I'm going to go to Oregon.
So where are you on Memphis? Memphis wins 21-3. They come out
I'm glad you mentioned it because it was one of those games that, A, like, we had to figure out where it was. So we knew we had to go find Plus and find it. It was one of those games where I give them credit. They put the game away immediately.
Oh, and there was no doubt they were going to win.
Correct.
Like, because, I mean, you know, a lot of it's because Byron Brown didn't play.
Right.
But
they did put the game away immediately.
This is a game that before the season began.
Trap City.
There were three games that you're like, oh, they're going to play all three of their toughest opponents on the road. They're going to play UTSA on the road. They're going to play Tulane on the road. And they're going to play South Florida on the road. And these are the tough ones. And
it turned out Navy on the road.
And it turns out that Navy was the tough one, or at least one of the two tough ones. Tulane could be as well. And they won by 18. The game was never really in doubt. It was a game where they had to deal with all those logistical stuff. They didn't even know where they were going to be headed until very late.
Drive east.
Just head east and we'll tell you. Once you get close.
At some point we'll tell you to go south.
We'll tell you where you go. Right, exactly. And so here they are at 5-1. Like 5-1 North Texas this week, whatever, at home game, 6:30 I think it is. That's all great. On the other hand, the teams they have beaten, collective record of 6-24. They score those two early touchdowns and then really did nothing after that. In fact, they needed the defensive touchdown to extend their streak of scoring 20 or more points. They needed the defensive touchdown that was originally the officials botched it, called a safety.
I still have no idea how he originally called that a safety.
I got no idea.
Like, I was like, wait,
it's not a safety.
Yeah, I was like,
one thing it's not is a safety.
I don't know what the call is 100%, but I know it's not that.
So So where are you on this team? I mean, this is Tulane beat them 45-10.
Yeah.
Tulane beat them 45-10. Memphis scores 21. Tulane scores 45. And by the way, North Texas, although they're not that formidable, they are 5-1 and they can't score.
Yeah.
By the way, Mariotis is tossed for spitting.
Yeah, that was not great.
Not good to spit. Although it is funny. People think that, you know, it is the way people are reacting to the spitting. I got a call from Ron Olson today on the spitting. The spitting is considered the most heinous thing you can do to someone.
Yeah.
Worse, really, than chopping off their hands. Really.
Yeah.
And
especially if they don't bring a yule.
And it is bad. It's disrespectful. But it's interesting. It's like, which is worse, kicking the balls or spitting?
In terms of what it would do to the other person, a kick in the nuts.
A kick in the nuts is so much worse.
Yeah.
But the spits just seem so...
Well, on top of that, like, you're playing football and you're getting perspiration on you every time that there's contact.
Yeah,
like,
it's true. There's inadvertent spitting all the time.
There's always going to be an exchange of bodily fluids.
I think spitting, it's the symbolic...
It's a lot like what the finger used to be.
It's
like when the finger used to have, like, a
real... The reason people think it's so disgusting is... It's the symbolism of it more than it doesn't hurt you to be spit upon.
Correct.
In fact, you are, as you point out, as you're lining up in the aisle or whatever, you're getting spittle on you all the time.
Yeah. But it is the symbolic nature of what it establishes.
I spit on you.
Correct. Was it Berto Alomar who spit on the ump?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. It was. Yeah. I think it was. Okay. Anyway, so your thoughts on the Memphis offense and
I do think it's fair to say this. I think the defense. Navy game aside, I think the defense is actually
really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're fast. I think they're physical. And I think that is a
defense is good.
Especially in this league.
Yeah.
Like, I think it is clearly established.
No small accomplishment.
Correct. I think that they realized very quickly when Byron Brown's not playing, I think they realized very quickly, let's just not screw this up. And let's get out of here. This has been a weird week. Like, let's just.
Yeah, but tell me this. So why did they once upon a time used to score 50 games all the points all the time, and now they score not?
I definitely think that it was schemed up differently. Like I think in a certain way, I think this offense is a little bit more ball control, and whereas Mike's offense is going to be much more explosives. And it's just not the nature
of
the offense.
Heading into this season, all we heard was it was going to be all these. We were going to get back to explosive plays.
Yeah, I would also say this though. Like, I'm not so sure. Like, ball control's not back right now. I think that there's kind of been a pendulum swing in that everyone has gone with the explosive offense and trying to hit the explosives. Well, now what teams are doing is, all right, let's take away the explosive plays. Let's make people drive the length of the field. And if you can actually do that effectively. Like you're going to hold the ball and you're going to limit the amount of possessions the other team gets.
It's kind of amazing. Like, this is what happens when you play the schedule they have. You're counting on, in order to create interest, the bar is so high for that program now. In order to create interest, you have to be nationally relevant or you have to be knocking off someone like a good Florida State team or you have to be in the conversation for the playoff and you have to be not just 5-1, but 5-1 and scoring 50 a game. And it's really the schedule and the reality that does that to them. They got their butts kicked, really, defensively against Navy. So that's on them. But then the rest of it, the other thing that's happened is it's really the other thing that's diminished excitement about that program this year is what's happened around them that they had nothing to do with. It's Army being undefeated. Army's already 5-0 in conference.
Yes.
Because they play Air Force, Army, and Notre Dame late. These play all these non-conference games. They're already 5-0 in conference. I think they have East Carolina this week. They could be 6-0 in conference this Saturday. And so you're
and there's nothing you can do about
and
it.
And there's
to
nothing
your point.
You can do about it. You
like,
don't
you
have them on your
Navy,
schedule.
You, at least you could have done something about
right.
it.
And
but
you
Army,
can, you can beat Tulane, but you can't do anything to stop Army, and that's not your fault. And so,
which that might be a good thing for the country.
Both in the conference, you're kind of helpless, and then nationally, you see what Boise State is doing with Genty is racking up massive numbers once again this week. And honestly, the one loss they have to Oregon after Oregon beats Ohio State, good luck. Like, good luck if you're Memphis putting together something more impressive than certainly you're not going to put together something more impressive.
No, you just
than
need them. You just need them to either lose or not win the league.
Yeah. So it's some of the stuff out of your hands has really diminished the level of excitement for this team. Some of it's about the and then the loss to Navy was deflating. But I'm not going to come in here. I can't play the fight song after the. Let's be honest. After the first 10 minutes of that game, you better have had two or three other games on.
To me,
it
like
was
that,
not interesting.
That was very similar to having to watch the Ole Miss South Carolina game from the week prior, where it was like you realized very quickly which team was winning.
Winning, yeah.
And then it was just like another 3 hours.
And I kind of hoped that like Seth would figure it out and get another, you know, whatever. Like that, but they just didn't. They weren't interested in doing it. And so,
and then you had the weird weather, like the rain starts pouring down, like
right, like yeah. You went from sunny and hot in the first half to. Anyway, so yeah, but I'm certainly not going to crap on him for an 18-point win on the road.
But that was what made
those
it
logistics.
Weird. Like,
it was
how
weird
would you
thing.
Categorize it? It's okay. Like, it's like I don't know. They did their job, but at the same time, it's like I didn't come away going, "Man, they look good."
Well, okay, and that brings us to Tennessee.
Yeah,
same thing. Tennessee rallies from 10-0 down. They take the lead, then they give up the late touchdown pass and prevail with the walk-off touchdown. Dylan Sampson doing what he does now. 5 of 6 games, by the way, he has 100 yards or more. Like, he's been really good. But the quote-unquote explosive passing attack has been anything but.
So I guess the difference I would say between this game and the Memphis game for me, and I guess maybe I shouldn't think of it this way because it ends up being the same result. To me, it's like part of Tennessee's coming back to win is Graham Mertz getting hurt. And I can't believe like that's the reality, but it's like Mertz was playing extremely well. And him getting hurt completely flips the game. Now, the difference between the South Florida game...
South Florida game, he was hurt from the outset.
Correct.
You know, so,
right, so...
So he,
but it's not like Tennessee had control of this game, kind of let go of the rope, and then Florida... Like, Florida had control of this game. And Tennessee did... Like, Tennessee did figure out ways to win the game, but, like, I felt like it was more about what Florida didn't do than what Tennessee did do.
Okay.
Because I do feel at least Memphis controlled their game more than Tennessee did. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense. How about Alabama, South Carolina? Because there again, there's another one. And by the way, of course, Tennessee, Alabama, you've got two teams that do not look the way their fans wanted them to look.
Yes.
And for one of those teams, after this weekend, it'll be considered a disaster.
So with Alabama, it felt like they were teetering on putting this away and blowing them out, but they couldn't quite do it, and they allowed...
Well, wasn't good.
And then, well, he is who he is.
You've been pretty consistent on that.
Like
people
there,
who
there
were...
There was talk about him being the number one pick in this, and I was like, what? Are we watching the same
earlier
sport?
After the Georgia game... The way he was, particularly at the start of the Georgia game, looked like the best quarterback in the universe.
Correct.
Unstoppable. Right.
And I always thought that was more Kalen DeBoer than it is him.
Right. And then in the wake of that game, it was recently that people were talking about him being the number one pick in the draft. And then you see him like do what he does this past weekend.
I mean, he takes so many bad sacks, the drifting back, whatnot. Like, to me, though, what the real concern that I have is I've watched a decent amount of South Carolina this year, and I can't really explain why. When you let them look like they did in the passing game, that is not good. And I think that's kind of the problem that Alabama has. I think Alabama's a very good team, but I do think they have a clear, obvious flaw that you can pick on. And in this day and age, if you can pick on somebody secondary, that allows for a lot of games to get exactly like this.
They have a quarterback who's gifted but deeply flawed.
Yes.
And they have a defense that has a clear vulnerability. They've given up 11 touchdowns in the last 12 quarters.
Yeah.
They just don't look like Alabama. What's the line on the...
It was 2.5 I saw yesterday. I'm not sure if it's...
Do you have a strong feeling about it?
Not at all.
Well, the issue is that what Tennessee has done, they've been really good defensively, and they run the ball. Alabama's vulnerability... is through the air. Can Nico have the get-right performance against Alabama? Almost has to.
I mean, yeah, but like I kind of thought... It's not like Florida was shutting down people's passing games. I mean, that's the question to me. Is this a structural, like, is this a strategy by Heupel saying, we don't feel great about the passing game, let's not force the issue and lose these games, and so let's play a more modern style of field position, run the ball, like, you know, kind of ball control offense? Or is it the, we don't trust him, we don't trust our receivers, whatnot? What is the reasoning for why the offense has not looked even remotely explosive in the passing game the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
And then there's Georgia, which gets by Mississippi State 41-30.
Honestly, of all the games we've just mentioned, the one that I at least, like, excused the easiest was that one.
They were on the verge of blowing them out, and then Beck throws the pick in the end zone.
Yep.
Former Memphis defensive back makes the pick in the end zone, and Mississippi State goes down and scores, and that made it look much more competitive. You also did have a freshman quarterback against Georgia, 375-plus touchdown drives in the second half.
Yeah.
Did that bother you if you're Georgia? Again, we're talking about we're triumphant teams that we will not honor with our fight song. Carson Beck,
I mean,
great, 459 yards, 2 picks.
Would I feel great that happened? No. But at the same time, I thought of all these games we're talking about, the one where it's like, I kind of thought this was like a fake close game. When I was watching it, and that's not to, like...
That makes sense to me.
And that's not to diminish what Mississippi State did. Like, they came, like, good things happened for Mississippi State. But I also felt like this was, like, Georgia kind of sleepwalking and not really showing maybe the most killer of instincts. But, Jeff, they had 605 yards of offense.
Yeah, right.
That's like...
That is true. Yes. Carson Beck threw for 459.
It was 7.9 yards per play.
It was fake close, yeah. I agree with that. All right, we're going to come back to the fight song roundup when we return. Chris Herron will join us straight up at 10 o'clock, and we got a lot of other stuff to talk about after that. If you are selling your house, I've said this before, I'll say it again, call Josh Heupel. At least make him a call. You'll find out what I found out, that he's not like every other realtor. 901-461-8147. It's Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty. 901-461-8147. One of the things that Josh does is he markets your house aggressively. Same way, honestly, that if you hear us talking about Josh, it's because he wants to get his name in front of people the same way he wants to get your house in front of people. That's what he does. Jody heard us talking about it, called Josh Heupel, listed with Josh Heupel. Within a week, had 8 offers to choose from. I'm not promising you that's going to happen if you contact Josh and his team, but that's the kind of aggressiveness that Josh uses when he's selling your house. Phone number, once again, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you want something framed, it's the Frame Corner. That's where you go, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. They'll sell you a frame, beautiful frames, tabletop frames, frames you can hang on the wall, whatever. But if you got something special, collection of photos from a wedding or a graduation or sports memorabilia or whatever it might be, and you want to preserve a memory to last forever, you walk on in there and you let them do their magic, because they specialize in custom framing at the Frame Corner. And right now, if you start thinking about it, we got the holidays coming up. You get something beautifully framed, it shows that you didn't go the day before Christmas. It's a thoughtful gift is what it is, people. It's a thoughtful gift, which is what you should aspire to. 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. All right, let's do the fight song roundup. Well, that was crushing for Ole Miss, Jeffrey.
Whoo, boy.
I didn't know whether to celebrate LSU, but I thought we, you know, they were certainly celebrating. They were certainly celebrating, and I thought we should celebrate along with LSU. It was, though, as Lane Kiffin said afterwards, that is a game that Ole Miss should have won, and they lose 29-26 in overtime. Jeffrey, I will list some of the things that went wrong for Ole Miss, and you tell me which one you particularly identify as the killer. The dropped wide-open touchdown pass to Trey Harris.
Okay, he made up for it, though, with his second touchdown.
That's fine. He did. Oh, my God.
That was unreal.
That was unreal. Still,
yes.
Dropped touchdown pass for Trey Harris. We'll go through them all. The fumble by Henry Parrish that gave him a field goal at the end of the half. Fourth and one inside the four, stopped. The missed field goal, the missed 33-yard field goal. There's another one that I guess you could say he made up for by bombing in the field goal in OT. Or the two chances to stop LSU on fourth down on that final tying drive. Any of those stick out to you?
If you actually like want to take a play that kind of embodied the game for me, it's Trey Harris's drop touchdown, because to me, Ole Miss didn't lose this game in the fourth quarter in overtime. Ole Miss lost this quarter lost this game in the first quarter.
When they didn't put it away when they should.
They had a chance to game script this out, and the longer they let LSU hang around, LSU just kept kind of figuring out ways to make plays. Nussmeier was so much better in the second half than he was in the first half. Like, to me, it's really a combination of 3-for-5 in the red zone for 13 points. LSU only got in the red zone twice. Like, to me, it's what did you do with your drives? And then, you know, allowing that fumble, if you want to call the fumble at the end of the half, like, I'm fine with saying that because, like, it's all emblematic of letting LSU hang around, and they right. let LSU hang
that,
around.
That 3 points was critical.
Yep.
But then again, it's interesting. How do you feel about it? I mean, I do think you go for it on fourth and one from the four, right?
I didn't have a problem with that. I didn't love the
play.
Like where you're just, they know what you're going to do, and
right.
it doesn't really work if you can't use tempo like they want to. But, I mean, it wasn't like LSU turned that into a 96-yard touchdown drive. Like,
no, but you could have had three there.
Yeah.
I don't blame them for that. I don't blame them for that at all. But and honestly, here's the thing. It is one of those games, when you lose a game like that, and by God, as a Buffalo fan, I'm familiar with it. You just play it over and over and over again in your head because there were so damn many chances. And it really frames the season now going forward. And so it's absolutely...
Oh, I mean, you want to talk about a fascinating case study? After that loss, you've then got a bye week, and now you've got to kind of rally the troops. Ooh,
after
boy.
That week, you've got the... bye week, then you've got Oklahoma home.
Yep.
Then you go to Arkansas, and you can lose either of those games, depending on what
especially
you're talking about.
The mental makeup, yes.
Yeah, depending on the mental makeup. And then Georgia.
Yeah.
So
this was always the fear for Ole Miss, is what happens if it didn't go according to plan. You've got this portal team that was largely built in as a cash in the chips. Go all in.
Now, on the other hand, it's not over.
They've lost two games by 6 points.
It's not over. I mean, I don't think they can. I mean, I'll tell you this. You take the bye, beat Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Georgia. At the end of that, we'll be talking about them as a playoff team.
Yes.
Right?
Correct. But is that going to happen? I would probably bet no.
Really tough for Ole Miss. Shout out to LSU. I don't really believe in LSU, though. I mean, Nussmeier was great down the stretch, unbelievably good down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, he made so many plays, just like extending, you know, and then some really big throws. It was just Ole Miss had a chance to put that game away early, and they didn't do it.
And they did not do it. All right, next. It's just so funny, if these two teams played again Saturday, I'd take Ohio State.
I think so. I will say this. Oregon ran the football and moved the line of scrimmage in a way that I did not think they would.
That was astonishing, honestly. I really don't actually understand the, you know, we knew Ohio State, you know, we knew Jeremiah Smith was going to be good, right? People had questions about Will Howard, but people didn't really have questions about the defense.
No.
They gave up six passes of 25 or more yards.
Well, and they were getting gashed on the ground.
And they were getting gashed on the ground. So, and then, of course, Dan Lanning, with his aggressiveness, paid off this time. Did not let, you know, notably last year against Washington when he was 0-3 on fourth down in that famous loss. But, you know, I mean, fourth and inches, they're down, I think it was 28-22.
Yeah.
And they don't just go for it.
They ran a pass play
action. They, yeah, 32-yard play. Like, Dan Lanning was this was a big win for Dan Lanning. And this is a big loss for Ryan Day, but nothing is fatal now. You know, nothing is fatal now. Fourth straight loss for Ryan Day to a top five team. But really impressive by Oregon. And by the way, as we said before, it certainly makes the Boise State thing look even more impressive.
Completely agree. I do wonder, should Ohio State, like, I'm normally, I think coaches chase points a little bit too much. I did wonder, it's like, when you kind of felt like this thing was going to be a back-and-forth game, should you have gone for two when they scored, like, 11 minutes left right to make it a seven-point game? I don't know. I mean, then Will Howard, you got to get, buddy, you got to know.
Got to get down. Got to get down.
You had a timeout. I mean, I know it's an unlikely field goal still, but it's like, you got to at least get the chance.
He was not that last drive. Falls down to begin.
Yes.
Couple incompletions in there, and then, like, I thought he was good, honestly, until that last drive. He was clearly the inferior of the two quarterbacks, though. And
I felt like that last drive, the pressure got to him. And then,
right,
I mean,
there was not a lot of poise on the last drive. He also does the advantage of throwing to Jeremiah Smith.
I didn't love the pass interference call.
No, I didn't either.
But, I mean, I guess you kind of understand. It's like, do I think it was a push-off? Yeah.
And you had the Judkins fumble. That was huge. That's huge. You're up. They're up 7-0.
I mean, this one to me, this one's pretty easy. This was a dead even football game. You go through almost every single
one. And Dan Lanning stole the one with the onside kick, and then they got the other one with the fumble. Those drives matter.
One turnover in this game, it led to 6 points.
One thing interesting is that Oregon now has a 95% chance of making the playoff. Ohio State, with the loss, 93% chance of making the playoff.
I mean, is a one-point road loss going to really...
No.
Like, is that going to be held against them?
Right. So, anyway, thrilling game. This one was also thrilling. Next. Thrilling ending, anyway. USC, I feel like they should... I feel like they should have a better record than this. USC should not be as dead as they are. But Drew Aller was tremendous down that last drive. That last drive, like, I saw what all the NFL people want to see at his best, right? Big, strong dude throwing dimes. It was weird that on the... freaked out on his own offensive line that one play. Did you? It was interesting, but he was money. And then, of course, Tyler Warren is a game for the ages. 19 touches, 237 all-purpose yards, including a play in which he snapped the ball and then caught a touchdown.
Yes,
nicely done.
He did it all.
And so much, by the way, we talk about these wins and losses for coaches. Big win for Dan Lanning. Big loss for Ryan Day. Huge win for James Franklin.
Completely agree, because this is normally the style of game that he loses.
He loses.
When his team falls behind, they don't really have the reputation of being able to get back into the game. But I'm with you. Drew Aller, that's the best game I've ever seen him play, even with, whatever, three picks.
Yeah, three picks. Because he was tremendous. Tremendous.
I mean, he had to make throws that actually, like, brought them back into the game.
No, he looked like... I mean, he kind of looked like Josh Allen at his, you know what I mean? He looked a big, strong dude carrying a team, putting a team on his shoulders. That's what it was.
He doesn't run like
no,
Josh
he doesn't.
There.
All right, next. Maybe I should have led with them, but it was just this Oklahoma team, you know?
Well, I think the other problem is Texas left you wanting a lot more on offense.
Right. Quinn Ewers was not good.
Certainly well, in the first quarter.
You can just call him rusty.
Yeah, but it was felt like it was more than that. Like, I mean, those were really bad throws.
199 yards. Okay, either bad throws or rusty or both.
But to me, the key difference is he was afforded the opportunity to play like that because there was just no
threat.
There
was no chance.
Like, Oklahoma kind of knew it, too. Like, when you heard Venables at the halftime interview, like, oh, well, just got to treat it like it's a nothing-nothing game. It's like, oh, he knows that they have no chance.
So how you enjoy the SEC, Oklahoma? Having fun yet? We having fun yet? Brent Venables, 20-12. Is he the wrong guy for that job?
I mean, who else would you have gotten? I mean, that's kind of the other question. It's like, what were the other...
What else would you get?
What were the other options?
By the way, I think there can be a situation where he's the right guy to hire, but may in the end be the wrong guy for the job. In other words, given the circumstances, you can say, oh, well, they made the smart, you know what I mean? They made the swing for the fences there.
They are clearly better on defense.
They are clearly better on defense.
The problem is when you hire a guy like Venables and he's going to be in charge of the defense, you are very dependent on nailing an offensive coordinator hire every time, and that's hard to do.
And it's also true, though, and if you get it right once, they're going
to
leave.
That's what I'm saying. You're going to have to keep doing it.
It's a high enough profile job that you're just going to have to keep replacing them and replacing them and replacing them. You think easier to nail defensive coordinator job to be the offensive head coach and nail the defensive coordinator job over and over again? First of all, they're less apt to be hired away from you.
Bingo. And to me, defense is more about getting guys in the right place and getting guys that physically can do it.
So next up, Georgia. How about that? First trip to Austin since 1958. God. Scheduled.
I mean, this is going to be one of those things where, is this going to be NFL light where it's going to be like, which team needs the win more?
It is. It's already NFL light. But here's the thing. I don't notice like whether you're looking to the fan reaction in Oregon or the fan reaction in LSU. I don't notice it diminishing. It clearly diminishes the impact of the wins and losses, but I don't know that it diminishes the enthusiasm of the wins and losses. People seem to be enjoying the wins just as much.
Yeah, I think the impact of the wins and losses is more on the psychology of the teams. I think you kind of know.
I can get away with losing.
The fan reaction is always going to be the fan reaction.
All right, next. How about this, ladies and gentlemen? Back-to-back SEC wins by Vandy. You thought they'd follow up with the big win over Alabama by stumble out against Kentucky, didn't you?
No.
You didn't?
No, because I...
Do you have a good week? It felt like you were having a good week.
We had a great start. We finished in the black, but we were staring at like 10-0 at one point, and it flipped on us.
Anyway, Vandy beats Kentucky. Never trailed in this game. And it's just nice to see, honestly. They're good. Now, Pava didn't have to do anything spectacular.
No,
he threw for 143. He ran for 53.
My concern is the hits are starting to accumulate with Diego.
Looked a little banged up there.
He did not look fresh, shall we say.
All right, but it was fun to see that. Fun to see him back up a win with a
Absolutely.
Win. So other teams we could have honored, Jeffrey, and see if you think we made any mistakes by not honoring them. How about Iowa, 40-16 over Washington? That's Iowa. Iowa, Jeffrey, 40 points for Iowa. Tim Lester offense getting it done. Caleb Johnson, 21 rushes, 166 yards. And Kirk Ferentz, 200th win.
Yes, I definitely thought about suggesting that one to you. Also, I'm just not sure. Like, It was great, but it's like, I don't know what Washington is. Like, are we giving Washington a lot of credit for beating Michigan who might stink?
That's why I didn't in the end include him. How about Wisconsin? Luke Fickell may be figuring it out. 42-7 over Rutgers, which had been stingy. Rutgers had been stingy. You impressed by that win?
Rutgers was decimated with injuries, but what I've been impressed by is Wisconsin the last couple of weeks, like, the offense is starting to click, and they're actually presenting a challenge.
How about some of our undefeateds? Pitt over Cal, BYU over Arizona, Iowa State over West Virginia.
You can't honor Pitt because they didn't cover.
I'm sorry about that.
the other two you very much could honor, because I think those other two are just getting completely slept on.
How about Arizona State, Kenny Dillingham beating Utah?
So
how about that? Cam Rising came back and he got injured again immediately. That was
Kenny's post-game interview in which they were asking, like, you went to school here. He's like, I was these kids storming the field. And, like, that was great.
34 years old.
The thing that I appreciate about watching Arizona State this year is I don't think that they're good, but they're extremely well coached. They play every game as hard as they can. So it's one of those teams that you can appreciate watching play because it's like exactly how, if you don't have a talented roster, it's how you want your team to play. Like, they feel like they smoke and mirror it. They scheme up the best they can, and they just leave it on the field.
K-State over Colorado.
Yeah.
Again, Travis Hunter hurt. That wasn't good.
Hunter gets hurt. I think half the receiving room got hurt. Also, that pick, Avery Johnson had to kind of keep them, like, to go put the game away. It was fine. I think there were other way more deserving candidates than that one.
Army over UAB?
Yeah, we're not going to.
44-10, they just roll, man. Yeah. Just roll.
But it's still, you take care of business against UAB.
We can't honor them for that. And then we could have blown up. I mean, you know, whatever. We could still blow. You could always blow up Florida. They didn't get the win. Napier now 14-17 overall, 7-12 in the SEC. And just a bunch of bungles, too. That's the other thing. When you mentioned the Tennessee thing we were talking about earlier, they had the too many men on the field
special
for the field
teams
goal.
Blunders.
Special teams thing. They had the failed four trips to the red zone.
They didn't
score
so many times
where
you look at them and you're like, do they even practice? That's the biggest problem with the Napier era is there's supposed to be this, you know, this whole operation. They never look well coached.
All right, we're going to talk to, that wraps up.
We haven't blown someone up.
Oh, we got to blow someone up. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. I was feeling kind. We had talked about the game, so I skipped this part. That's Kentucky. And, yeah, we hadn't blown anyone up. Here's the problem. Stoops. 5-8 after a bye.
Yeah.
Stoops lost three straight to South Carolina. Stoops has lost two of the last three to Vandy, two of them at home. And Stoops is 2-8 in his last 10 SEC games.
Yeah, I struggled with what to do with this game because on the one hand, like, I thought Vanderbilt offensively, like, took control of the game. Also, the bigger problem that I kept saying is like, man, Kentucky just looks like crap. Like, it's not like Vanderbilt's defense is like, it would be one thing if you got into like a game that was in the 30s and they got the ball last and made a play. It's like, they just looked inept on offense.
Is this just the sort of what happens if you stay too long? Like,
yes,
no one.
100%.
No one.
And it's what happens when you stay too long and you have probably hit the ceiling of what your program is. And so, inevitably, you're going to start getting paid.
Like you're...
Correct. But you don't have the opportunity.
Like, and then you get resentful that you're not being appreciated sufficiently. But there's still a ceiling to what you can accomplish.
Yes.
It's why, in fact, Mark Stoops... I get that, you know, you get paid that much money, and who knows, maybe the perfect job offer. What do you think he turned down? What do you feel confident that he turned down? Is there a job that leaps to mind? Or is he always just sort of, here's an attractive candidate?
I think he turned down Florida State.
No,
at different times, I think.
Probably a mistake. That's probably a mistake. Over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, this is kind of amazing. 47 years, 47th anniversary sale, which speaks to their investment in the community. As you remember, the family started in New York, and they were doing business down here, and they said, you know what? This would be better. Let's move down to Memphis. And that was 47 years ago. And during this 47th anniversary sale, you can save on engagement rings, wedding bands, diamond earrings, diamond pendants, gemstone jewelry, gold chains, bracelets, all of that. Perfect gift for your special occasion. And don't forget, Robert Irwin Jewelers offers the meant-to-be guarantee where you buy your loose diamond custom-made engagement ring from Robert Irwin Jewelers and you have 365 days to return it for any reason. Plus the stuff that they offer, just the free ring sizing for life, the diamond trade up. If you want to upgrade to a new diamond, you bring your original diamond back, pick out a new diamond, you only pay the difference. They've got the spa, the free spa service for your ring where they just keep taking care of it, polishing it, tightening it, all of that. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, 47 years of making people happy here in Memphis. You can check them out at their convenient locations across the Memphis area or online at rijewelers.com. Chris Harrington on the other side, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.